It is time for the single coolest sports show in the country, The Life with Matt Bonner, presented by Concord Orthopedics.
You've got Matt Bonner, who my notes tell me is a sandwich blogger named Red Mamba. I mean, how can you not like a guy like that?
And the Red Rocket knocks down the triple.
Red Rocket, I'm telling you, Red Mamba might not miss a shot.
Just like in politics, in the instructional video business, you need credibility.
You want credibility? I'll give you credibility. Hey, Tim, what's my nickname?
The Red Rocket.
No.
The Sandwich Hunter.
No. Fry Gun.
The Medium Fundamental.
This is The Life with Matt Bonner. I am Chris Ryan. This segment of the show brought to you by Loudoun Country Club. Closer than you think, Loudoun Country Club. Check out loudouncc.com for more information. And tee times, I have a very tired cliche that I could use in regards to the Celtics in golf, but I'm not going to use that. I'm just going to let it sit out there as we welcome in Matt Bonner from Texas. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Appreciate you joining us for the show. You know what? We're not going to do the Bleeds It Leads sports coverage here today. We're going to start with the Bruins. And congratulations to the Bruins for making it to the Eastern Conference Finals. First time since 2013. Really hard-fought series against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Interesting to see John Tortorella, the Columbus head coach, first guarantee that there was going to be a Game 7 inside TD Garden, have that not quite come to fruition. And then trying to get into Tuukka Rask's head and saying that the Blue Jackets had put some dents into Tuukka, and then Tuukka shuts out the Blue Jackets in game number 6. That's the thing about making statements and stuff. They can backfire, and I'm interested from your perspective, Matt. I mean, you've always been a believer in you avoid the bulletin board material, and that right there is one of those circumstances where it shows why.
Yeah, I agree. I understand why coaches and team leaders do it from time to time for motivation for their team, but it does have the opposite effect with the other team. It motivates them to kind of shut you up. So it can definitely backfire. That's why I'm not a fan of it.
That's why you do it behind closed doors. Like, say that stuff behind closed doors. Say, you know, we're going to be back here for Game 7 because I believe in this group. Or, you know, you guys put some dents into Tuukka Rask. There's no need to say it in public. When you say it in public, then you bring in the other people into it as well. You bring the media into it. You bring the other team into it. So I guess it carries a little more weight if you do it and you're like, you put the onus on your team like, hey, guys, I believe in you. But, yeah, I think it mostly backfires.
Yeah, and the team better really believe in the person saying it, too.
Right, and that's also true. So the Bruins going to take on the Carolina Hurricanes. They're halfway to the Stanley Cup. There's been some controversy in regards to, a lot of controversy in Boston sports these days, with Brad Marchand giving short answers, both in TV interviews, and pretty much all of Canada is up in arms about his treatment of the reporter for TSN, and that he was short with him after said reporter tried to make a joke with Marchand, which irritated him before game 2 about whether he sharpened his skate blades that he could skate over Cam Atkinson's stick and break it again. Marchand didn't like that. He thought it was a little too much, and now is kind of not talking to the media while talking to the media. Do you care?
Me? Personally?
Yeah. Are you offended? As now a TV reporter yourself, are you personally offended that Brad Marchand is not engaging in interviews with all his heart and soul?
I mean, yes and no. Part of me, you know, as an entertainment value, we're talking about it, so it creates more entertainment and stuff to talk about by him not talking. That paradox makes sense.
Yeah.
Secondly, there's plenty of other people you can talk to. So, I don't know. If it keeps going the whole time, maybe. I don't know.
So let's switch gears to the Celtics. And, you know, this series, in my view, was going to challenge the Celtics like they hadn't been before. And we're going to see if, in fact, they had overcome the hurdle of not really being a team throughout the course of this year, at times going their separate ways, trying to do too much, not playing like a cohesive unit on defense and offense. And, you know, we really saw the worst of the Celtics in game 4. In my view, Milwaukee was saying, here is this game, take it and win it. And the Celtics said, nah, I don't think so. I don't think we're going to win this game tonight. You can have it. And you look at Giannis and Middleton, four fouls apiece. They shot the ball under 40% for the game. Giannis was great, obviously, with 39 points. But other than George Hill, he had 15. Middleton didn't shoot the ball well. He had 13 points. Their defense was really, really good. But Giannis and Middleton were out for the majority of the third quarter with four fouls. And that's the time for the Celtics to go to work. Kyrie was off all night, making mental mistakes, missing shots, making weird decisions on defense. Like, he's switching off guys to guard Giannis down the stretch. If you can figure that out, let me know. The Celtics' glaring deficiency of not being one cohesive unit really came to light in games 3 and 4 at home.
Yeah, I mean, and to me, the bigger issue here is clash of styles of play. Because you're right, you look at games 3 and especially game 4, where they cleaned up a lot of the things that shot them in the foot in game 3. They didn't foul as much.
Right. They got to the line more.
They guarded. They got open shots. They just couldn't make them.
Mm-hmm.
But despite all of that, the Bucks still scored 113 points,
right.
which tells me it's a style of play issue.
Right.
Like the pace is too fast. That's how the Bucks want to play.
Yep.
The Bucks were atrocious shooting the basketball pretty much across the board. Their bench played pretty well. Giannis was efficient, but they still scored 113 points. Imagine if all those guys were making those shots.
Mm-hmm.
They score 130 plus. And if you remember, I said in the beginning of before the series even started on the show, you gotta make the game a knock 'em down, drag it out, half court battle. If you get in the up and down game, you're not gonna win. The Bucks want to score 120, 130 points. They want to score in the 100 teams on a bad shooting night, which is what they've been doing. And if the Celtics engage in that style of play, they're not gonna win. You look at the game one when they blew them out. Their transition defense was mm-hmm. fantastic. You want to take away transition and fast breaks. You got to take good shots, high percentage shots, so the court's balanced and you can get back. Preferably, you make them, so they have to take the ball out of bounds. That takes time. You don't turn the ball over. That leads to fast breaks. And then you're opportunistic with your fast break, but otherwise, do what you did in game one and mm-hmm. execute the crap out of all your sets.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they did. And they just wore down the Bucks. They didn't foul. They showed a great crowd on Giannis. Every time he tried to drive to the hoop, they had Al Horford guarding him. They weren't switching smaller guys onto him. They had Al on him the majority of the game, who's big and strong enough to be able to kind of back off and bump him and try to slow him up as he gets to the paint. And then everybody else was really sharp, digging in and helping and double teaming when he turned his head. They got to get to that style of play to have any chance to beat this team, because otherwise it's just too much firepower on that Bucks team.
That is phenomenal analysis right there. Phenomenal analysis, because you're right. I mean, in game one, the Celtics dictated the tempo. In the first half of game two, they dictated the tempo. Since then, not so much. I mean, you look at what they do each time they get the ball over whether it's a make or a miss, and the Celtics are in a hurry to get into the front court. And the reason that the teams are shooting in the high 30s in terms of percentage and the score is 113-101 after game four is because of how quickly they're putting up shots. And Terry Rozier, putting up shots quickly. Kyrie putting up shots quickly. And the Celtics not really executing an offense where they're getting quality looks. Yeah, they got open threes, but that comes back to another point. I mean, the Celtics shoot a lot of threes, but they're not a great shooting team.
Right, exactly. That's not their strength.
Right, and I feel like they still go back on that a lot. And you look back at game three, and a key point that Scal made on the broadcast was that everybody was complaining about Giannis and how many foul shots Giannis got. Well, the Celtics never put themselves in a position to allow the refs to call, to make calls in their favor. They have, in my view, the Celtics are a better drive and slash team than a three-point shooting team. I mean, Tatum can get to the basket. I don't know why he doesn't get calls. I mean, he never gets calls, and that's another issue, but he never gets calls. He gets fouled all the time, never gets calls. Jaylen Brown is a guy that can slash and get fouled. Kyrie Irving, I don't know why Kyrie Irving fades away on everything and doesn't go to the free throw line, you know, more often. I mean, obviously it's his size and he feels that he's good in terms of getting that shot off, but he has moves around the basket where he can finish at the rim and get fouled as well, but he, for whatever reason, had kind of gone away from that.
Yeah, I agree. They got a lot of athletes with size who are very good at getting to the basket. They seem to fall in love with that three-point shot a lot. They shoot 40-something last game?
Yeah, and they made, like, 8 of them.
Right. So, I mean, that should probably tell you at some point. Let's take it to the hole. I mean, this is something that plagues all teams that struggle, especially when they're struggling shooting. It's not just a Celtics issue. The Spurs went through the same thing where it was like we couldn't throw it in the ocean outside the paint, yet we kept shooting them. And, you know, you're watching it on TV, and you're like, go to the hole. Put the onus on the referee to make a call, or at least use your size and strength to either finish or collapse the defense and kick it out. And then that guy's either got a wide open one, or now he's attacking a closeout, and the defense is spread out, and their weak side rotations are off, and now you get an open, even more open shot in the paint. It seems so glaringly obvious, but for whatever reason, in the throes of battle within the game, it's really hard to make that kind of adjustment in real time.
And the Celtics have a talented group of players that aren't, in my view, utilizing their talents to the best of their ability. And that by these guys are not Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are guys that shoot, and they can shoot the basketball, but that shouldn't be their, you know, what they do predominantly. Their predominant strength is using the drive to create opportunities for their shot or opportunities for their teammates. Same thing with Gordon Hayward. And so that's kind of missing on the offensive side of things. Going into game five, though, I mean, this is the Celtics' opportunity to plant their flag. Everyone has given up on them. Everyone. The fans, media, everybody has given up on them. I feel like the Bucks feel pretty assured that they're going to win this series. So now is their opportunity. You know, they've said all year that they're going to be a playoff team. Last year they had obviously significant wins without Kyrie and Gordon Hayward, and this is their chance. Because, like I said, nobody believes that this is coming back even to Boston for Game 6. So, you know, are they able to rediscover themselves, or are they going to continue to go in their own different directions and play variations of hero ball? Everybody feels it's going to be, you know, the former, and that they're going to pack it in. But we shall see. And, you know, this group wanted to be something. It thought they were going to be something. And now is their opportunity to either claim it or, you know, go into an off season where just about anything can happen in terms of this roster.
Yeah, this is definitely one of those character games where you're going to find out what this team's made of. And you summed it up. Are they going to pack it in and wave the white flag, or are they going to show up and battle and show their true character one way or the other?
Right, exactly. And that's the key point. They're going to show their true character one way or the other in this game, because that really hasn't really been identified yet, you know, with this group. And, you know, Kyrie's being criticized, rightfully so. He's walking off the floor before the game's over. He's saying he should have shot the ball 30 times when he's shooting, you know, 7 of 22 in this game. After he shot 8 of 22 the game before in Game 3, he says, you know, that's not going to happen again. Well, it did happen again, except for it was worse this time. He made one less shot. And, you know, the teammates, folks around the team feel like he has one foot out the door. I mean, this is going to be really interesting to see. It's one of the more fascinating games, if not the most fascinating game of the Brad Stevens era.
I agree. I mean, you know, covering the Spurs this year, we went through a similar, not as dire, but similar situation where we lost Game 5 at Denver.
Mm-hmm.
And went down 3-2 and had lost 2 games in a row in the series. And we were coming back home to San Antonio for Game 6. And I had said the same thing on air. This is a character game. You're going to find out what the Spurs team is made of, because they've lost 2 in a row. Their backs are against the wall. everybody's down on the team. Are they going to fight and force a game seven? And they did, and they won the game and went to game seven, and you know, almost played horrible in game seven, but they did win that game six. When it's kind of similar thing, everybody had given up on the team. So this is a little more tricky because it's 3-1. You've lost three games in a row, and you're on the road, so even more adversity.
Well, Matt, as always, good to talk to you. We're going to check in with the Bruins and Celtics in the middle segment of the program, then talk with Michael Chavis, the Red Sox rising star, and we'll come back with more here on The Life with Matt Bonner. This is The Life with Matt Bonner. I am Chris Ryan. The segment of the program presented by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. If you've been injured, the most important decision you're going to make is who your lawyer is going to be. I encourage you to check out Douglas Leonard and Garvey at NHLawOffice.com. The Boston Bruins moving on to the Eastern Conference Finals for the first time since 2013 as Tuukka Rask stopped all 39 shots he faced as the Bruins shut out the Blue Jackets 3-0 in Game 6 of their second-round series in Columbus.
It was a penalty late in the period, obviously something that we didn't want. And, you know, you just try to kill those off and move on. So I think the past three or four games, our PK was excellent.
David Krejci scored in the second period, and Marcus Johansson and David Backes added goals in the third for Boston, which won the series 4-2. Here's Backes.
We're halfway to our goal. I think you need to relish the plateaus along the way, and we're certainly at one of those. We're in the final four teams, and we're going to enjoy this for a day and then have a happy flight home and then get ready for Carolina.
Bruce Cassidy talks about the play of Tuukka Rask.
He was definitely our most consistent player throughout the whole series. We had guys give us good performances from game to game, but he was there every night.
So congrats to the Bruins. Without question, though, the game of the series was Game 5 inside TD Garden on Saturday night. A third period which was probably the best third period of hockey that I have seen, given what was on the line at stake, series 2-2. Just tremendous plays, goal-scoring plays, defensive plays, saves, blocked shots. It was tremendous as the Bruins had a 2-0 lead. They opened up that lead early in the third period of play. Columbus Blue Jackets get one back. Then the Bruins score as David Pastrnak nets one. That makes it 3-1. Two goals from the Blue Jackets. Then the Bruins score with 1:29 to go as Brandon Carlo, tremendous defensive play in his zone, secures the puck, goes cross ice to Brad Marchand. Marchand then goes tape to tape to David Pastrnak, who one times it into the back of the net. That was the last goal of the game, but the Blue Jackets would have chances late as well, as Tuukka Rask making a stop on the doorstep. Also, a post was hit. A tremendous third period of hockey. Here is my interview with Patrice Bergeron.
Great plays by everyone. Obviously, Chucky with a big block at the end. So, you know, those guys are stepping up big time, and you know, it's obviously contagious when you see guys doing that and buying in, and you know, at this time of the year, that's kind of what you need.
What does it mean that this group, in a situation where you perhaps could have panicked and things could have gone a different direction, that you responded the way that you did collectively?
Yeah, you got to be happy with that. I thought, like you said, it was a great response, and you know, that's playoff hockey right there for you. It's not always going to be a perfect game, but you got to find ways, and ultimately you're looking for the result, and you know, we got that tonight. So now it's about enjoying this tonight, but then you know, game six is gonna be the toughest game for sure, so again, be ready for that.
See, this particularly a big moment for the young players. Carlos said this was his biggest test in hockey so far, and to see him, you know, get through. Mm-hmm. And he mentioned your leadership, but to see them get through in these particular moments.
Yeah, you know, we have some character young guys, and you know, it's like I said, we feed off of them just as much as they feed off of us, and you know, we've been a tight group all year, and I think that translates on the ice. And but yeah, when you see those young guys stepping up like they do right now, you know, you have no other choice but to elevate your game. So you know, I think it's about, you know, having 20 leaders on the ice and doing that together.
Seeing Pasta and Marchand step up the way they did, how significant was that?
It was great. You know, it was great. You know, they've been playing amazing for us all year, and you know, we had some great looks tonight, and you know, I thought we stuck with it. It's you know, they're a good team. They're not going to give you much, so You got to stay resilient and stay with it, and ultimately, you'll get a bounce, and we did again tonight.
Here's Bruins defenseman Zdeno Chara.
Well, I think that you need in the playoffs contributions from every line, but specifically, we have a line that has been so good for us throughout the whole year, and they are not going to be obviously scoring every game throughout the whole playoffs, but again tonight they show why they're so good.
Brandon Carlo is one of the more unheralded players on this team. Talk about his role tonight and also the way he has played throughout the postseason, how it's helped you guys.
Yeah, great. I mean, he really stepping up, and seeing a guy who since the day one and what he is now, obviously he's making big strides, and he's a very important player for us.
Was that one of the more dramatic third periods you've seen, particularly given what was on the line in the Game 5?
Sure. I mean, it's something that definitely was playing till the last second.
Has Tuukka been the MVP for this group to this point?
I don't know. I'm just focusing on what we can do. Obviously, he's playing great for us. That's something that it's up to somebody else to decide, but definitely he's been our best player.
We talked about Brandon Carlo there and Carlo's play on the game-winning goal. Here is Brando.
I recognized that it was offside, so I knew I had a little bit more time than normal. So looked for Marshy, kind of made eye contact with him, and he gave me the puck, and he wanted it, so gave it to him.
What was your mindset on that play and also the shift before that where it seemed like you were aggressive trying to get this team kind of back into it?
Just to continue to play hard. I think when they tied it up, you can kind of go into a panicky situation, but overall with the experience that I've learned so far, that doesn't help anybody. So just try to stay calm and go out there and do your part. And for me, if I can get the puck up to the forwards and get it out of our zone, that's the biggest part of my job, so I want to continue to do that.
Was it difficult not to have that mindset to panic given the fact that there's so much change and variable in that third period? The leads are changing, yeah. Goals being reviewed and so forth.
It was definitely the biggest challenge that I've been through so far in hockey. Obviously the situation dictates more pressure. Mm-hmm. But we've done a great job, and especially having the older guys, Z, Bergie, Marshy, those guys who have been in those situations before, to tell you, hey, we're going to be all right here, is a big thing.
Troy Krug is Carlo's defensive pair.
It's great plays. I mean, unbelievable. What Chuck did there is, it hurts to win. Sacrifice somebody, blocking a big shot. Who knows what happens if that gets by him. And then Brando's been doing it, not only all playoff long, but all year long. Just, he doesn't get the credit that he deserves, shutting down plays. He ends more plays than I've seen in by anybody in this league, to be honest. So, and then he gets rewarded with an assist on a game-winning goal. It's a big moment for our team, and he takes one of the best one-on-one players in the world and ends a one-on-one, and off we go, and we get a goal. So, great job by him.
Seemed like he was kind of single-handedly trying to change the momentum at that point by being aggressive even before that play to try to get you guys back into the game.
That's part of being a good team and a mature team that knows how to win. Certain players realize that big plays have to be made. It's all about understanding what the game needs. If a game needs a big hit or a block shot or a big stop and then skate the puck out of the zone, it's all about what the game needs, and I think he's starting to understand that, and the rest of our back end is as well, and we talk about it all the time, but like I said before, it was a great job.
What was the third period like from a player's perspective where you're seeing the ebb and the flow of the game, and how do you kind of keep your eye on the focus aspect of things?
Well, I think that's just a mature group that knows how to handle those things. We've been on the other side of it where you do claw and fight your way back into the game, and all of a sudden you find yourself going into overtime with a chance to win a game that was really out of your reach the whole time. So we've been on both sides, and we're learning how to win as a team. We've done it all year long, but these are big moments with a younger group that relies on an older group as well, and it's just it's a lot of fun to play in those games.
Also, I'm tuning to talk with Matt Grizzlick, who scored for the Bruins in Game 2.
How would you define this town's relationship with its hockey team, having grown up here? Obviously, the Patriots and the Bruins and Celtics are huge here, but what is the relationship like with the hockey team, and how is it different than the other teams?
I consider Boston a pretty big hockey town. I think they like the blue-collar kind of mentality that the Bruins have, and we try to continue that tradition, obviously, this year, and kind of use our speed and skill, but also be physical when we can. I think the fans appreciate that. So I think it's a good relationship.
How does the leadership in this room with Berge and Chara and Krejci, who are all very calm, kind of lead by example type of guys, then you have Marshy who mixes things up, how does that work in terms of the dynamic in the dressing room, and how does it affect particularly the younger players?
I think they're awesome. They're especially as a younger guy, they go so far out of the way just to make you feel comfortable and come over and talk to you kind of right when you're called up or joining the team, and can make a huge impact on younger guys. So being able to see that firsthand, and really lucky to have those guys around.
What have you learned about Columbus early in this series, and was there kind of an awe factor of them coming in, given the nature of what they did against Tampa, not as familiar with them as the Leafs, and trying to figure out who they are and how to approach them?
No, not really. I mean, there's only 8 teams left. Everyone's competing for the same goal, so we knew they had some time off. We were just trying to ride that energy coming in from Game 7 as best we could. So we're hoping not to have a letdown tonight, and we got to come out harder because they're going to come out banging and want to be physical.
Do you feel like the core of this defensive unit is in some ways underrated because of the amount of talent that is here, and perhaps that's an overlooked aspect of the team given how good the forwards are?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not really sure what their perception of our D core is, but I know we have really, highly skilled forwards, so our job is to kind of get the puck into their hands as best we can, and obviously keep the puck out of our net, and won't win last game, but they're going to have a lot more pressure on us tonight, so we've got to be ready for it.
And finally, how much do you think experience matters in postseason hockey, in playing Game 7s, having seen what a lot of the players, and yourself included, have seen?
It's tough to judge. I mean, it's only my second year. Gotten the chance to play in 2 Game 7s. I know those are experiences I always look back on. Can kind of draw to in order to get myself kind of prepared for the next series and the next team. But at the same time, at the playoffs, you got to make sure you're rested and feeling, good about your game, good about, your body, and make sure you're taking care of yourself. So I think that's kind of just the biggest thing I've gathered year to year.
Switch gears to the Celtics, who lost Games 3 and 4 at home. We talk about Game 4 here as the Bucks beat the Celtics 113-101 inside TD Garden. Giannis Antetokounmpo logged 39 points and 16 rebounds for Milwaukee, which has a 3-1 lead on the Celtics. For the Bucks, it was really their depth that was able to have success for them. Both Giannis and Chris Middleton, 4 fouls in the third quarter, did not play much of the third quarter, but that is where, once again, the Bucks built their lead. Here is Bucks head coach Mike Budenholzer.
We've been down, I think, the first quarter, maybe every game, and second quarter, find a way to ride it a little bit, and third and fourth quarter, just defensively, I think our activity, our togetherness on that end of the court is just fueling everything we do.
Here's Milwaukee forward Chris Middleton, who had 13 points.
When the game's not going our way, we're getting in foul trouble, can't make shots. We knew at some point those shots are going to start falling. I mean, we had a lot of great looks, missed some layups, but we knew we kept trusting ourselves, kept trusting the offense. Eventually, the shots are going to start falling.
Kyrie Irving may have led the Celtics with 23 points, but only shot 7 of 22, this after shooting 8 of 22 in game number 3.
It's a little different when, your rhythm is challenged every play down. You're being picked up full court. They're doing things to test you. And, the expectations on me are going to be sky high.
So now we're going to find out a lot about this Celtics team in Game 5 on Wednesday. Here is Celtics head coach Brad Stevens.
It's win or go home. You do the same thing you've been doing all along. You play the next possession to win it, and that's it. You focus on that. It takes a lot of mental fortitude. It takes a lot of mental toughness, and it reveals a lot.
After Game 4, I talked to 2 Bucks starters, including Brook Lopez.
Brook, the fourth quarter, you guys went on the run with Giannis and Chris on the bench. What did you guys do, and what does that mean about this club, that you're able to do that and close out this game with that run?
I think we just, we kept playing the same way we have been all season long, and, in this playoffs, in this series, and last game, and in this game. whoever's out there on the floor, we're going to go out there, give maximum effort, you know, trust one another, help the helper, have each other's back. And, you know, the results will speak for themselves, you know. If they make tough shots, it is what it is, but we're going to go out and play hard and leave it on the floor.
What does it mean about to this group to come in here and win games 3 and 4, knowing that what they wanted to do and knowing that you were able to impose your will in a lot of ways?
It's great. You know, I mean, it's a tough environment to play in, but I think the guys in this locker room really embraced that challenge. It was fun to be out there, you know, 1 through 15, us against all those guys in the stands, them on the court. It was a fun environment to play in. You know, that being said, we got one more game to play in game 5, and I think we're all excited to get out there and do it again.
It seemed like the big key was your defense. You guys were swarming all night long, making things really difficult for them. What were the keys to the effort there?
You know, it's effort. Like you said, it's just effort. You know, having each other's back, scrambling, communicating. And, you know, that's been... You know, that's been our linchpin. That's been where we've gotten everything this entire season.
It seemed like Kyrie was frustrated, you know, throughout the course of the night, off a little bit here and there, traveling, making mistakes. What have you guys been able to do against him?
You know, I don't know about the other team or anything like that, but we've just been so great at being focused on ourselves, regardless of whoever's out there for the other team, whatever's going on, and just continuing to do what we do for 48 minutes.
The Bucks' depth was obviously a key in this game and has been throughout the series. George Hill, the way that he has played, the veteran guys that have fit in so well with this with this group. Were you guys feel like you're underrated in terms of the supporting cast behind Giannis and Middleton?
Well, I don't know about being underrated, but you know, we have a great belief in each other in this locker room. Great belief, great trust. And we know whoever's on the court, if we play the right way, we keep the ball moving, we share it, we play with pace, the good things are going to happen.
You've been in the league for a while. How fun has this experience been for you playing with this group, and how does it compare to other groups?
Oh, it's been a blast. You know, it's one of the most special groups, no question, I've played with during my career. And, you know, we're just out here having fun. You know, it's a great group of guys. There's no bad guys. And we're all on the same page as far as roles go. And, you know, we all have the same goal at the end of the day. So, you know, we're out here having fun.
Thanks, Mark.
Also talked with Nikola Mirotic.
So talk to me a little about what you thought the keys were here in this game for, particularly that third quarter run that you guys went on with both Chris and Giannis with 4 fouls.
Well, our bench was once again huge tonight. Even without Giannis and Chris at some point in the third quarter, we played some great basketball. We played with a lot of physicality. You know what? We played this year a lot of good third quarters. I think that's been our strength. And just sticking together, man, no matter what. They had their run into the first quarter, but we keep playing. And the pace we are playing, you know, it's very difficult for Boston so far to stop us.
What has keyed you in the third quarters throughout the year? Obviously, it's been the key in this series in games 2, 3, and 4, the way that you've competed in the third quarter.
Good meetings here with the coach, you know. Watch some real quick few clips, you know, about the mistakes, what we do. And just the mindset that, you know, how important it is to start a third quarter. So those first 3-4 minutes and then of the third quarter, it's huge, and we just try to trying to find a way how can, you know, make a difference into the game. So we try to play 48 minutes our basketball, and that's I think that's the key so far why we are 3-1 up in this series.
Everyone talks about how you guys score the basketball, can score in the 120s, Giannis' ability to get to the basket, but the way you've defended in this series, I think, has been the key, particularly here in game 4, where you obviously held him a low percentage shooting, but you were flying around defensively, making things very difficult.
Well, that's a huge key for me, right? Coach put a trust in me to put me in the starting lineup. For me, it's been very, you know, very challenging to guard those small forwards. And so far, I've been doing a great job. I know I was really capable to do it, and it's not like I just did it here. I did it last year with the Pelicans. I did it with the Bulls. And just excited, you know, to be able to help the team. And when we play like right now, 3 big guys, we're able to switch with that length. We're able to shrink the floor. We're able to rebound better. So just try to play my basketball, not just shooting the ball and and play defense and, you know, play for each other.
Finally, your depth in this series has been huge, and there's a lot of focus on their depth and their talent, how good they were coming into the series. But it seems like your depth is one that perhaps fits better together as a team and plays off of one another. How good are you guys as a unit, a cohesive unit, complementing each other?
No doubt. When you see the way George is playing, the way you see Pat Connaughton is playing, everybody, Ely, Tony, when doesn't matter if you play 5 minutes, if you play 10 minutes, you see everybody's ready, and that's the, you know, that's our strength, which means that coach is doing a great job making everybody ready, and we know if we want to be in the position to try to go to the next round, we need everybody, because you never know when it's going to be your time to play. So we have really good deep team. Even without Malcolm so far, we've been playing great. So we're all looking forward for him to get back and to get better as a team.
This is The Life with Matt Bonner, that segment of the show brought to you by Douglas Leonard and Garvey. Up next, we talk with a rookie by the name of Michael Chavis, a Red Sox star in the making who so far has helped to save the Red Sox season. This is The Life with Matt Bonner, this segment of the show brought to you by the Prescription Center, where the health of you and your family comes first. More information, check out prescription-center.com. It's no secret the Red Sox season has not gone the way that they would have liked to date. The team at 17-19 as they play in Baltimore. One of the reasons that things are not worse for the Red Sox is Michael Chavis, a rookie who has not come out of nowhere. He was certainly on the horizon, but I don't think anybody expected what they have gotten from Michael Chavis to date. He has 6 home runs, 13 RBI, and is hitting .309. And he has had a significant impact on winning baseball games for this Red Sox team. I talked with him inside the Red Sox clubhouse.
It's been amazing to watch the start of your big league career. And obviously each individual comes in this clubhouse dreams of what that start is going to be like. How is this kind of fit with what you dreamed this was going to be like as a kid?
As a kid, I kind of dreamed as a simple part of it, of just being here and performing on the field. I couldn't ask for more of how things have gone within the clubhouse. That's not really something you think about when you're a kid dreaming about playing Major League Baseball. I mean, you don't really understand how things work within the clubhouse, and you don't dream about getting tips from older guys. You just think about being here, you know what I mean? So having already had the dream come true of making it here, now I'm kind of like living the dream and experiencing things that I didn't anticipate, which essentially is all the help and assistance I've gotten from everybody here. I've learned so much just from talking and listening and watching these guys that maybe even more than I learned all last year, honestly. Like, it's been unbelievable.
That's one of the most underrated aspects of this team, going back to last year in the World Series team, is how much these guys pull for each other. And, you know, as a guy like you who's coming in, a rookie guy who might be taking somebody's job moving forward, nobody thinks about that, and it seems like. They think about, okay, how do we help this guy? How do we make him better so that he can help this team and help us win again? And that's a really special thing in baseball that's not there every day.
Right, and that's something I wasn't really sure of what to expect when I first got here. Like, I've been around the guys in spring training, but spring training, it's different than the regular season. Mm-hmm. So when I got here, I didn't really know, like, if I would be immediately welcomed, if I had to, like, pay my dues and earn respect. But, I mean, as soon as I walked in, everybody was welcoming. Everybody made sure I felt comfortable, and they were happy for me to be here. They were happy that I was here to help the team, and I think I kind of made it clear that I wasn't here to be a problem or cause attention. It was just I was here to try and help the team, and that's what they're trying to do.
And you've definitely done that. It wasn't meant to have the impact that you've had. And over the stretch that you've been here, the team's obviously played better. You've had an impact in wins, and that must be, you know, pretty special for you to come in and not just be here, but having an impact every single day. And how have you done it?
Definitely. I mean, that's kind of what my focus has been, preparing for the game and then during the game, is just I'm trying to help the team, trying to keep things simple. I mean, at the end of the day, we're here to help the team win. That's what it's all about, is winning the ballgame. And keeping things simple and trying to win and help the team in any way I can, that's what's been the key so far.
And flexibility, too. You played second base here. You played first base. And is that kind of the mentality that you have to have when you get to the big leagues? There's not going to be a spot cleared for me. I have to fight and scratch and claw each day to make sure that my opportunity presents itself tomorrow?
Definitely. I mean, in the minors, everybody jokes about it, knowing that when you get called up, I'm not going to be hitting third every day. I'm not going to be the same guy I was in AAA. So coming up here, I didn't expect to hit third, start every single day, and then I've been blessed enough to have started every single day that I've been here, which has been incredible. It's helped me get more comfortable and more consistent in the box and defensively. So
I'm enjoying it. Really, I really am. It's been incredible.
Is it at times difficult, you know, not to be yourself in these types of moments? And how much did the guys, getting back to the beginning, help you in allowing you to be yourself and to take, because you take that big swing, you're going to try to drive the baseball, hit as hard as you can during each at bat. Is it difficult at times to be yourself when there's so many different people around? And has this group helped you to be yourself?
They've definitely helped me. Like I said, how they've made me more comfortable. Mm. And having had the experience in spring training, getting to know the guys and see how they interact in the clubhouse and in the dugout, it definitely helped me make that transition to coming up here and becoming comfortable for sure.
Best moment so far?
Honestly, I'd have to say my first hit. First home run was big, but my first hit, that's next level, honestly. It was unreal.
How do you describe that feeling? Is it like a state of euphoria? Is it like, how would you describe it?
It didn't even feel like real life.
Yeah.
Everything that I had dreamed and worked for my entire life, like, I dreamed of that exact moment. That's what's wild about it, is like, when I was a kid, I literally dreamed about hitting in a clutch situation for the Red Sox in my debut and getting a big hit off of a nasty closer, and that's what happened. I mean, it's literally, I can't describe it.
So does time just kind of stop, or do all those things kind of come through your head? You think of your mom, and you think of your moments as a kid, and your coaches, and all that stuff kind of come through your head, or is there kind of like a piece that comes about you in that moment?
In the moment, it was, I can't believe this has happened.
Yeah.
Like, there were so many thoughts going through at once. Part of me was trying to, like, enjoy the moment. Part of me was trying to, like, win the ball game.
Right.
So, I mean, off the bat, I knew I caught it well, but, like, I was praying Kiermaier didn't catch it the whole time, so I was, like, I was just running just in case.
Yeah.
But going through my head, don't get thrown out, don't trip, like, yeah. Simple stuff. Yeah. Like, this is a big moment, don't ruin it by doing something dumb.
Great personality and a fun guy to be around, in addition to being one heck of a hitter. Michael Chavis right there. Christian Vasquez has been a hitting star for the Red Sox as well. Vasquez at .267, which is good, but he has 5 home runs, which ties him for the most he has ever hit in his career. And he's just, 6 weeks into the season. 14 RBI as well, in addition to doing a good job handling the pitching staff. Here's my conversation with Christian Vasquez about his offensive output.
You've been really adept at driving the baseball this year, both home runs, obviously RBIs. What's been the key for you? And has there been a change in approach? Where obviously you inside out the ball a lot the last couple of years. Has there been a change in approach, or just more opportunities to drive the ball this year?
I never look for homers. You know, that happens. Came early this year. I'm trying to drive the ball gap to gap more in the air. I make some adjustment in the off season and now, and I think it's working. So we need to stay there and be consistent all year.
What has it meant for you to help the team in this way? Because your impact is obviously felt, throughout the course of the team in regards to your ability to manage the pitching staff. But to impact the game more from an offensive perspective, how satisfying has that been?
I think everybody want to help the team. Feels good to help the team that way, hitting and catching, doing both, and the goal is continue to do the same thing all year. The slump is going to come, but make sure the slump is short and maybe 2 games, 3 games, and get out of there and continue, be consistent all year and help the team.
Do you feel in some ways that you've kind of found yourself as a hitter? Because this is not, something new. You found yourself really, I thought, in October. You're driving the baseball well in the World Series and even prior to that. So do you feel that this is not just, something that has happened here at the start of the season, but this is the best you've felt swinging the bat in your career?
Yeah, I think so. It's the best. I never hit a homer in my career in April. I got 4 now, so it's,
the facts are the facts.
Exactly, but we need to continue working. Like I said, it's not 1 month season, it's 7 months. So we need to continue to work.
How good do you feel now as well as the way that the pitching staff has found themselves? And obviously there's not much doubt that it would happen based upon the skill set that these guys have. But there always is concern when things aren't going the way you want in this game. How satisfying has that been? And do you feel like these guys have found themselves and are at the form where you expect them to be?
We're human. You know, everybody have a time that they're going to suck. Like, me personally, I got time that I suck. So it's part of the game, you know. It's learn about the mistakes and get better, you know. So I think we start bad, and, you know, we're playing better now and better. So we need to continue that, you know, progress through September.
That is Christian Vasquez. You've been listening to The Life with Matt Bonner, that segment of the show brought to you by the Prescription Center.